Hi, I just wanted to tell you about another podcast called Scorned Love Kills. It's brought to you by my favorite network, ID. The podcast features real audio from the hit TV series. On it, you'll get the true and unexpected stories of love gone wrong. And believe me, these shocking investigations have secrets, scandals, and betrayal at every turn. Each episode features insights from reporters, law enforcement, and psychologists close to the case, and they take you inside the deadly results of the dark side of love. If you like gripping stories like the ones we share with you on the case, I'm sure you will also enjoy Scorned Love Kills. Listen to Scorned Love Kills wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, they help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Their doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true healing starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com.
Welcome back to On the Case, the podcast. I'm Paula Zahn, and thanks for joining us for Episode 4, A Betrayal Concealed. Tonight, we're on the case in Shepherdsville, Kentucky, about 20 miles south of Louisville. The serenity of the small farming town was shattered when 17-year-old Jessica Dishon mysteriously vanished from her own driveway. After police tirelessly worked to piece together the puzzling clues behind her disappearance, Jessica's heartbroken family never could have imagined how the case would be solved. Friday, September 10th, 1999. It was just after 1 o'clock on a warm summer afternoon when a then 34-year-old Edna Dishon pulled into her driveway. She was puzzled to see her daughter Jessica's car still parked in front of their house.
She should have been at school till at least 2:30, probably at work after 3.
Edna went inside to check if the teenager had stayed home sick, but there was no sign of Jessica. She immediately called her husband to see if he had heard from their daughter. Jessica's father, Michael Dishon.
About 1:30 that day, Edna called me and asked me if I had took Jessica to school, and I told her no.
Edna decided to look inside Jessica's car for clues, and what she found was troubling. Jessica's backpack, her purse, her cell phone, and one of her shoes were all in the car. Edna immediately began to panic.
I was like, oh no, I knew something was definitely wrong. My heart was just racing and I couldn't believe it was happening.
When I got home, she said, well, everything that Jessica would take to school with her, her purse, her backpack, is in her car.
Just then, Jessica's two younger brothers arrived home from school. They said they had heard their older sister in the shower that morning as they left to catch their bus. Edna and Michael checked the car to see if it had any mechanical issues. But the car started without a problem.
I called the school. They said she hadn't attended school that day.
The Dishons knew it wasn't like Jessica to skip school. Deputy Lynn Hunt.
Completely out of character. She got good grades, and she was very dead set on doing what her parents wanted her to do. They always knew where she was. They always knew what she was doing.
Edna frantically called everyone her daughter knew.
We called her friends and asked the neighbors if they'd seen anything or heard anything, and no one heard anything.
When her cousin Deanna found out that Jessica was missing, she immediately shot down any notion that Jessica had run away.
She had no reason to run away. She was a very responsible young lady, but above and beyond that, she loved her little brothers like there was none other.
I mean, if you're going to run away, at least you're going to take your purse. You're not going to walk around just one shoe on.
Ed and Michael drove to the restaurant where Jessica worked part-time after school. The manager said she hadn't shown up for work.
So then we went to the police station.
We went and we told them what was going on.
But when Jessica's parents went to the sheriff's department to file a missing persons report, they were shocked by their reaction.
I didn't think anything serious was going on. Maybe she's at a football game. Maybe she ran away. They told us to go home and wait, and she wasn't home to come back tomorrow.
The Dishons refused to wait. They rallied the entire community to begin their own desperate search.
Jessica's father was the one who organized the first searches. He started calling his brothers and sisters. Jessica's missing. I need your help.
But finding Jessica in the sprawling countryside wouldn't be easy.
Most of the families in that area live on 5 to 10 to 20, sometimes even hundreds of acres. So when you say your next door neighbor, you may be talking about a half mile down the road.
Edna Dishon waited by the phone, hoping that her daughter might call.
I stayed in everybody else. Family, neighbors, friends, a lot of the community they were all out looking for.
Edna grew increasingly concerned with every minute that passed without word from her daughter.
It was the longest night ever. I mean, I have a hard time of staying awake, but that night, there's no way I can sleep. We was glad the son finally got there so we could go down to the sheriff's department.
When the Dishons returned to the sheriff's department at daybreak, deputies took their missing persons report and began an official investigation. Their first stop was at the Dishons' home, where they began by inspecting Jessica's car. Edna hoped they would find a clue that would lead them to her daughter.
Just hoping there's got to be something that, you know, lead you all to where she's at. Fingerprints or a hair or something. Just please let there be something.
Investigators discovered evidence of a scuffle near Jessica's driver's door. And that, along with the single shoe found on the floorboard, raised the troubling possibility that Jessica had been abducted. It was a fear Edna had suspected all along. Now she worried whether police could find her before it was too late.
I'm thinking, what if they don't get to her in time? Maybe she's out there. Maybe she's cold. Maybe she's hungry. Maybe she's hurt. I can't help her, you know. That went through my mind a lot.
Edna and Michael also tried to think of anyone who would have had a reason to harm their daughter. But there was simply no one who came to mind.
She was a good kid. And I'm not saying that because Jessica's my kid. Jessica was a good kid.
As word of Jessica's disappearance spread through the community, a sense of dread settled in. Jessica's cousin, Deanna Sanders.
The community was afraid, and You know, certainly nothing like this had ever happened in our town.
Sheer panic set in.
Everybody was staying together. We were really scared.
While the FBI and local law enforcement agencies used every resource at their disposal to find the teenager, her loved ones continue to hold out hope for her safe return.
But Edna admitted that keeping hope alive was getting more difficult with each passing day.
I'm thinking it's going to take a miracle for someone to find her or someone that knows anything. It's going to take a miracle.
Jessica's family tried their best to stay strong.
I think that we all try to stay as positive as we could for Edna. So even though in your mind you have doubts, you try to put on a brave face and still move forward every day, like today was going to be the day that they were going to find her and bring her home.
But as weeks went by with no new clues as to Jessica's whereabouts, the investigation slowly ground to a halt.
It is a mystery. She's not been found. Nobody's been arrested. We're still looking for her.
Deputy Lynn Hunt.
There were no investigative leads. There wasn't any other evidence to go on other than the car. After exhaustive interviews, there was nothing left.
The Dishon family and the FBI offered an $18,000 reward for information on the case.
There wasn't a sign or a street that didn't have something about Jessica, the high school, the local restaurants, businesses. Everyone, for the most part, went above and beyond and did anything that they could to help.
But it did little to move the investigation forward. And then, 17 days after Jessica disappeared, police were called about a gruesome discovery.
A bus driver driving her regular route phoned the sheriff's office and advised them that she had found a body down in a ravine.
Investigators rushed to the heavily wooded area along the Salt River. It was just 7 miles from the Dishon home.
When the sheriff's office arrived, they found a female body down in this ravine. She was against a tree and her pants were pulled halfway down.
A rope with traces of red, silver, and gray paint was wrapped around the victim's leg. The FBI and forensic experts pieced together other disturbing clues about the crime scene. Medical examiner Dr. Barbara Weekly Jones.
The interesting thing is that we know that that body was not there days before because people passed by that road every day and did not see this body sitting there.
And just 15 feet away, detectives found evidence that confirmed that theory.
There was hair and body fluids in another location. So we knew that somebody had moved it to a location where she could then be seen and somebody could find her.
Police believed that the rope they found had been used to move the body.
What I assumed happened was that when the body got moved from point A to point B, the rope was used to pull her body.
A class ring, a necklace, and a small tattoo were the only evidence that pointed to the victim's identity. But there was no doubt in the minds of investigators they had just discovered Jessica Dishon's remains. On the Case, the podcast will continue in a moment. Hi, I just wanted to tell you about another podcast called Scorned, Loved, Kills.
It's brought to you by my favorite network, ID. The podcast features real audio from the hit TV series. On it, you'll get the true and unexpected stories of love gone wrong. And believe me, these shocking investigations have secrets, scandals, and betrayal at every turn. Each episode features insights from reporters, law enforcement, and psychologists close to the case, and they take you inside the deadly results of the dark side of love. If you like gripping stories like the ones we share with you on The Case, I'm sure you will also enjoy Scorned Love Kills. Listen to Scorned Love Kills wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at AbilityChiro.com. That's AbilityChiro.com.
Edna and her family were home when a patrol car pulled up to their property.
I was hoping for the best, but thought it was going to be the worst.
The sheriff came into the driveway and really didn't have to say anything. Everyone stopped talking. The look on his face told how this story was going to end.
The police then delivered the heartbreaking news to the Dishons.
He said, "We found your daughter."
I said, "Is she alive?" He said, "No, she's dead."
Dental records officially confirmed the Dishons' worst fears, and the autopsy report only added to their pain. Deputy Lynn Hunt.
She was strangled. The cause of death was strangulation.
Based on the way Jessica's clothing was found, detectives believe that the teenager had been the victim of a sexual assault. But forensic experts were not able to find conclusive proof.
The way the body was left at the scene was indicative of a sexual assault. But as far as physical evidence, it was not there.
Yet, forensic experts were able to determine that Jessica had died shortly after her disappearance.
Within 3 days of her missing, she was killed.
Small pieces of foam found on Jessica's body indicated that the teenager had not been murdered at the location where she was discovered. That finding led police to believe that her killer was someone who lived in the area.
They found themselves doing neighborhood canvasses, interviewing people who were involved in Jessica's life.
Due to those canvasses, word began to spread fast about Jessica's violent murder. Her death stunned the community and shattered the lives of her parents.
It shouldn't be happening. No parents should have to bury their child.
Jessica was known as a quiet girl who was mature beyond her 17 years. She loved her family deeply, especially her two younger brothers.
She was like a mother hen to them. After she got her driver's license, it was like, "I'll take him and do this, or I'll go do that."
She was just always happy and always full of life.
At her funeral, hundreds of mourners paid their respects to the soft-spoken high school senior who had planned on going to college to pursue a career as an accountant.
It consumed the entire town. You have a female, 17 years old, who is abducted and then later found murdered the entire town was up in arms over it.
Jessica's murder forced her family to view everyone in the community with suspicion. Jessica's cousin, Deanna Sanders.
The question was, who would want to do this to her? It was unimaginable who would want to see her hurt.
The family had become convinced that Jessica's killer had to be a local.
It had to have been someone from the area. Because her home is so secluded, I could never imagine a stranger pulling into her driveway, and certainly where her body was found. You have to be from our little community to even know that that road exists.
And investigators had already begun to zero in on a man who fit that description. His name was David Brooks.
David Brooks was an individual who had been born and raised next door to the Dishon family. His whole family lived next door.
When questioned, the 40-year-old farmer admitted to seeing Jessica on the day she went missing.
Brooks explained to the FBI that he had seen Jessica that morning walking in the direction of her high school. He became the last and only person who had seen her alive that day.
But when law enforcement pressed him about the sighting, Brooks nervously changed his story.
He discounts the first story that he provided investigators and says that he saw her that morning standing by her car in her driveway.
As police scrutinized Brooks' story more closely, they began to have concerns. And Edna Dishon's interaction with him later that day only added to them. Edna spoke with Brooks shortly after she returned home from work on the day of Jessica's disappearance.
I remember when I came home that day, he was on his parents' farm, and we had a small conversation.
Edna said she had never spoken with Brooks before. So that made what he said next even more disturbing.
He was asking me, why are you home so early? I thought that was kind of odd.
Investigators asked Brooks where he was in the hours between seeing Jessica and speaking with her mother. His answer raised more red flags.
He was at work, but no one else was there that morning. They did not use time cards or any type of information that we could verify that he had been there.
The circumstantial evidence against David Brooks continued to mount. Residents reported seeing Brooks' van parked along the stretch of road where Jessica's body had been found in the days leading up to the discovery. They also learned that Brooks had rented professional carpet cleaning equipment after 11 p.m. on the night the teenager was found. Police wondered if he had used it to cover up evidence of a crime, or if it was just an odd coincidence.
The timing of that was clearly very, very bad.
Investigators obtained a search warrant for the Brooks family property.
They were looking for any type of evidence that Jessica Dishon had ever been on that property, for evidence of a rope that was used to drag her body from point A to point B. They were looking for clothes. They were looking for her shoe that was still missing. Anything that could have tied him back to her.
A canine unit trained to find cadavers was sent to the property. The dog uncovered evidence in a farm building. Medical examiner Dr. Barbara Weekly Jones.
She went under the couch cushions And under the couch cushions, there were a pair of work gloves that had a terrible odor to them.
Additional evidence was found during a search of the Brooks work van.
They collected some rope. That rope was the same size, length, and type that tied the feet of Jessica Dishon when she was finally found.
While the items collected from the property were sent to the FBI crime lab for testing, the investigation centered on David Brooks. Jessica's father, Michael Dishon.
The FBI said every rock and stone that they had turned had led back to him.
Once friendly neighbors, the Brooks and Dishon families were now at war.
When the Dishon family found out that Brooks was going to be the lead suspect in the case, there were exchanges between the two families.
Detectives found out that the Brooks family was responsible for a series of prank calls made to the Dishons.
And you would get like breathing sounds or laughing sounds, or a lot of times when you go to pick up the phone, they hang the phone up.
But the harassment didn't end there.
They would go down the road and honk their horns and make obscene noises. Why would someone do that?
They would say things that you just would not ever imagine that you would say to someone whose child was killed.
The Dishons became convinced that David Brooks and possibly other members of the Brooks family were involved in Jessica's death.
No question in their mind. Why would you taunt a family who had a daughter who had been murdered unless you were involved in it? What other reason would you have to do that? That's what they thought.
Law enforcement agreed that their actions were suspicious. So police continued to turn up the pressure on their number one suspect, David Brooks. They polygraphed him a total of 6 times. The results were stunning.
2 were inconclusive, and the other 4, he was clearly not telling the truth.
Investigators believe the only reason Brooks failed 4 polygraph exams was because he knew the truth behind Jessica Dishon's murder. 16 months after Jessica Dishon disappeared from her driveway, her next-door neighbor, David Brooks, was charged with capital murder. The news gave the Dishon family an overwhelming sense of relief.
Now maybe they get the murders off the street and it won't be no other innocent girl get killed.
Thank God. We're just very happy knowing that justice is finally going to be served.
David Brooks' trial opened in January 2003 with the prosecution seeking the death penalty. When she saw him in court, Edna found it difficult to restrain herself.
It was very hard to just sit there and think, you've done this to my daughter, and I have to sit here, and I can't do anything. I just had all kinds of crazy things running through my head.
Jessica's parents were forced to listen to 3 solid weeks of disturbing testimony.
We asked him what he would say if his fingerprints were found on the body, and he responded, quotes, "If you find my fingerprints, I'll have to admit it," end quotes.
Then, prosecutors called Assistant State Medical Examiner Barbara Jones to the stand. They believed that her testimony about the rope and work glove found on his farm would connect Brooks to Jessica's murder. But the move badly backfired.
I was the defense's best witness because I was saying that my dog found evidence that had decomposing human scent on it, and that's it. There was no hair that was found and no DNA evidence that could connect any of that to Jessica Dishon.
After David Brooks' defense lawyers had cast serious doubt on the physical evidence, they began a heated cross-examination of the lead detective on the case. And he made a stunning admission about how Brooks had become a suspect in the first place. Deputy Lynn Hunt,
the lead detective in the case, finally said because he flunked the polygraph exam.
He failed the polygraph.
It was a terrible blow to the prosecution. The results of a polygraph exam are not admissible in court. And that critical mistake led the judge to immediately declare a mistrial.
It will cause a mistrial every time.
The Dishons were crushed by the sudden turn of events.
I can't believe that it happened, to have a mistrial saying the word lie detector. And I'm thinking, person in law enforcement, they've caused a mistrial because they've used that word. Why is that? I didn't understand it.
But the Dishon family was even more confused when prosecutors decided not to immediately pursue a new trial. They worried that David Brooks had gotten away with murder. Jessica's cousin, Deanna Sanders.
It was disappointing when you're convinced that this person had committed this crime. You certainly want to see whoever did it be brought to justice and, more importantly, be put away where they can't do this to another child.
While the Dishons were certain that David Brooks was guilty, jurors who spoke with the media said they had little doubt he would have been acquitted.
I felt that Bucky Brooks absolutely was not guilty. An innocent man was in jail while there was a killer still on the streets.
Law enforcement knew they now had incredible obstacles in front of them if they ever hoped to move forward against Brooks or any other suspect.
Investigators at that point, I don't think, really knew what to do. You have a case that half of it has been tried. None of the evidence is going to be usable in court. So where do you go?
Prosecutors ultimately chose to dismiss all charges against David Brooks, and the new investigation never developed a suspect. For more than a decade, the Dishons were left without answers.
I didn't want to go to my grave not knowing. I want to know what's happened to my daughter.
Then, 15 long years after Jessica's murder, Detective Lynn Hunt reopened the cold case, and almost immediately she got a tip that reignited the investigation.
I received a call from a detective that I used to work with. He goes, I think I've got some information on an old murder case. It's the Dishon murder case.
And what he said next would change the course of the case forever.
He had information that no one had ever talked about. He had information that started to put dots together that investigators in the past had never had before.
The next big break on the case after this. Hi, I just wanted to tell you about another podcast called Scorned Love Kills. It's brought to you by my favorite network, ID. The podcast features real audio from the hit TV series. On it, you'll get the true and unexpected stories of love gone wrong. And believe me, these shocking investigations have secrets, scandals, and betrayal at every turn. Each episode features insights from reporters, law enforcement, and psychologists close to the case, and they take you inside the deadly results of the dark side of love.
If you like gripping stories like the ones we share with you on The Case, I'm sure you will also enjoy Scorned Love Kills. Listen to Scorned Love Kills wherever you get your podcasts.
Looking for more than just pain relief? At Ability Chiropractic, we help your body do what it was designed to do, heal naturally. Our doctors focus on spinal and nervous system alignment to restore balance, energy, and overall wellness. From infants to grandparents, families across Columbus are discovering that true health starts from within, not from a prescription bottle. Experience what natural healing can do for you. Book your appointment today at abilitychiro.com. That's abilitychiro.com.
Detective Gary Huffman told his former colleague that he had stumbled upon the new information when he was in the Kentucky State Reformatory, performing a routine interrogation of a convicted felon.
Typically, I'll ask questions along the lines of, have you ever witnessed a murder? Have you ever had someone come to you and admitted they have done that?
Usually, the prisoner says no. But this time, Huffman's diligence paid off. The inmate claimed he knew who killed Jessica Dishon. At the time, Huffman wasn't familiar with the murder. So he contacted Detective Lynn Hunt, the new lead investigator on the case.
He goes, I've got some information that I think you need to follow up on. He gave me the name and the prison.
Huffman and Hunt returned to the prison to interview the informant together. And Detective Hunt was stunned when the inmate gave them the name of who he said was Jessica's killer.
He said to me that Stanley Dishon had killed his niece.
And even more shocking was the motive for Jessica's murder.
Stanley Dishon had been raping and molesting her. She told Stanley Dishon that she was no longer going to keep this ugly family secret. She was going to tell everybody. And so he killed her.
At first, the story seemed hard to believe. Then Detective Hunt learned that Jessica's uncle was already behind bars for sexually assaulting two young girls.
Here is a guy who was in prison for raping two juveniles. It made sense. It made all the sense in the world.
And detectives became even more confident as the informant laid out the details of the crime.
There was an argument that occurred as Jessica is leaving to go to school. She started yelling at him, and he took his fist and he struck her in the side of the jaw, which incapacitated her.
The injury matched findings in Jessica's autopsy. The informant said, after Stanley Dishon knocked out the teenager, he took her to an abandoned barn.
And then he kept her for up to 3 days, and he tortured her, and he strangled her.
The informant told detectives that Dishon carefully hid her body in the woods after the murder, and then moved it a few weeks later. Dishon's story about why he felt he needed to relocate the body was strange.
He felt bad for her. She was cold. She was alone. She was half naked. He had covered her up with a tire so no one would find her, and he felt like she was freezing to death. So he goes back down there. He moves her so that the body could be found.
The informant told Detective Hunt that Stanley Dishon had opened up to him because he was worried about evidence he had left at the scene. And he was due to get out of prison in just a few weeks.
He buried her shoe next to a big tree close to where the body was. And he tells the informant that as soon as he gets out of prison, he has to go dig that shoe up and destroy it. That was the urgency.
The detective found the informant's account to be credible.
Too much specificity not to believe that what the informant was saying was truthful.
And when police found a second prisoner who had heard the same story, prosecutor Michael Ferguson believed it was the beginning of a solid case. He made it clear to both informants that they would get nothing in return for their cooperation.
They were never offered any deal, never told that they would benefit in any way, shape, or form, even if they came in and testified. It wasn't going to happen.
Detective Hunt went to work, looking for physical evidence that would back up the informant's story. She and Jessica's brother went to the spot where Jessica's body had been found, looking for the shoe Stanley had buried.
Jessica's brother and I were together. We had done an exhaustive search for this missing shoe, not once but twice.
Both searches failed to uncover any evidence. But as they drove away, Jessica's brother pointed out an old barn where Jessica and her friends used to hang out.
I stopped in the middle of the road and I went, "What?" And it was just, for no other explanation, a God moment.
Detective Hunt suddenly realized that the barn could have been the one the informant had mentioned, the location where Stanley Dishon murdered Jessica.
If there was any doubt about the story that the informants gave us, it was verified in that barn.
We walk into the first building, and I look over and I see a piece of material that's sticking out from the dirt. And I said, "What is that?"
It was a bed sheet. Detective Hunt photographed and collected the evidence and drove to the Dishon's home to see if there was any way to connect it to Jessica's murder.
I walked through her room, and it was unsettling. Everything was still in her room the exact same way as it was the day that she was abducted. I pulled the comforter back, and the sheets were gone. Not there. Missing. It was just a mattress.
Detective Hunt then showed the sheet to Jessica's mother.
I opened the bag and I said, "Do these look familiar at all?" And she said, "They look just like her sheets." And she goes, "But her sheets are still on her bed." And I said, "No, they're not."
The detective knew then that she now had the evidence she needed to make her case against Stanley Dishon.
That was it. That was his nail in the coffin. It's just one of those moments as an investigator that will almost buckle you at the knees.
Investigators believe it was now time to confront Stanley Dishon. Detective Gary Huffman.
When we initially arrived, he was very nervous, literally shaking in his chair.
During the interrogation, Dishon refused to confess, but his emotional denials only further convinced investigators of his guilt.
When we walked out of that room, I had 100% no doubt in my mind that he had killed Jessica.
But proving it beyond a reasonable doubt would be a much bigger challenge. Prosecutor Michael Ferguson studied Dishon's criminal history and wondered
if he had abused other young girls.
I thought, more likely than not, there are other victims.
And sadly, he was right. Investigators quickly discovered that Dishon had abused the children of several of his relatives while he lived in their homes. The girls, who had remained silent for years, each now agreed to testify against him at trial.
Len Hunt is the type of detective who created the environment where people could come and speak to her and be very, very comfortable doing that. That's a gift that she has, and it worked here very well.
The threat of facing his victims in open court, along with the other evidence police had compiled, led to Dishon entering an Alford plea to all the charges against him.
Basically, an Alford plea is saying that I'm not admitting that I did it, but I'm admitting that they've got enough evidence against me to find me guilty.
Prosecutors saw the plea deal as the safest path to justice, given the cloud of suspicion that had lingered over David Brooks for more than a decade.
I understood that the Commonwealth had indicted another individual. I never lost sight of that as an obstacle. I also had a lot of contact with the victims in the family. I wanted to find the best resolution, and I'm grateful that we were able to do that.
The news of Stanley Dishon's arrest devastated Jessica's family, especially her father. He had tried to help Stanley, never suspecting that his brother had been abusing Jessica while living under his roof.
I gave him a home. I got him a job. Then he ends up killing my daughter.
Edna felt equally disgusted and betrayed.
I was really sick to my stomach. I mean, I couldn't believe it. You don't do this to your family.
Jessica's cousin, Deanna Sanders.
It was a very terrible, sad day for the family. I can't imagine the hurt that they have felt and gone through knowing that that he had done such an awful thing.
Prosecutor Michael Ferguson says there are lessons to be learned from this terrible tragedy.
If you're being victimized, tell somebody. Tell somebody. Do that. And don't be afraid to do that.
For Deanna, it's still hard to understand how anyone could take someone's life. She believes her cousin had finally summoned the courage to stand up for herself that day.
I think perhaps he came to just threaten her, and she, with her spirited self, made it very clear to him that it was not going to go on and that he had lost that power over her and that she was going to say something and move forward with her life.
During sentencing, 56-year-old Stanley Dishon stared at his brother while he addressed him in court.
He killed my daughter. And I said from the day one, when the man was caught that killed my daughter, I would see him hang.
Mike Dishon's face was just covered in tears. What a horrible position to be in. The guy that he thought did it, his next-door neighbor, was actually innocent. And then to top everything off, his brother did it.
In March 2015, Stanley Dishon was given a 20-year sentence as part of his plea deal. Even from behind bars, Stanley Dishon continues to destroy his family.
He just keeps saying, I didn't do it, I didn't do it. But if he didn't do it, why did you plead guilty? He's just a stranger now.
The pain that he has caused is just unbelievable.
On the side of the road where Jessica's body was found, a memorial has been erected, a constant reminder of the bright light that was tragically cut short. Her cousin Deanna can only imagine where Jessica's life would have taken her.
I think that she would be a great mom. She would have a career. She had a bright future ahead of her that unfortunately she never got to experience.
For David Brooks, the man originally charged with Jessica's murder, Stanley Dishon's conviction closed a painful chapter in his life. Brooks and his family showed incredible grace in forgiving police, stating, quote, "They are only human. They made mistakes, and I don't hold a grudge against them. We all make mistakes." Please join us again next time when we're back on the case.
At Ability Chiropractic, we do things differently. We believe lasting health starts with understanding how your body truly works, not masking pain with quick fixes. Our doctors take the time to educate and empower you to take control of your wellness journey. Through gentle, customized adjustments, we help restore proper function and unlock your body's natural healing power. That's why Columbus families have trusted Ability Chiropractic since 2012. See the difference for yourself. Book an appointment today at abilitychiro.com.